And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Our second hour today. Thanks again for joining us. Dan Roderick's here, continuing our discussions with candidates for governor just days away from the June 24th primary. And we're joined this hour by Larry Hogan, Republican candidate for governor, a businessman from Anne Arundel County, who waited until January to throw his hat into the ring. So he's sort of a latecomer among the candidates. He's been with us before, and he joins us again today. Nice to have you on the show, Larry Hogan.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you.
I ask every candidate this. Now, you've been out there since January visiting people. Of course, you had your Change Maryland organization working on this last year and the year before.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, I mean, you've heard a lot from fellow Republicans about what they want to see happen politically in Maryland. But I just wonder, as you go out and talk to people generally, whoever they are, independents, Democrats, Republicans, what do you hear from people when they meet you someplace and you're shaking hands? What do you hear from them in terms of their concerns?
Well, Dan, you're right. I've been traveling all across the state really for about 3.5 years with this Change Maryland organization I founded. And our group has 97,000 people involved, and nearly half of them are Democrats and independents. So it really is a nonpartisan effort. And people I talk to from one corner of the state to the other, regardless of their party affiliation, what I hear more often than not is frustration. And people feel as if there's a huge disconnect between Annapolis and the rest of Maryland, and they're concerned about the direction our state is heading, not just Republican voters, but independents and Democrats as well, who are not happy with the state of affairs in Maryland currently.
What's the disconnect about?
The disconnect in general is just they're frustrated with politics and politicians, and they're angry at Democrats and Republicans. And what I hear people say is, you know, why is there so much partisanship, and why are Democrats and Republicans always fighting with one another? You know, we have serious problems, and we wish that folks would just sit down at the table and come up with some common sense solutions instead of just calling each other names. And I hear a lot of that. But a lot of the frustration today is about...
That's not really the picture in Maryland, though, is it? If you're talking about Congress, you could say that aptly describes it.
Well,
when it comes to Maryland, you've got a different dynamic. You've got a Democratic dominance in the political leadership and in the General Assembly.
Well, and you're right. And in Maryland, the real issue is the kind of monopoly and not having the open and honest debate of the issues and not having a healthy and competitive two-party system where you can, you know, talk about your differences. And people are concerned about that as well. And when the Washington Post endorsed me, they basically cited that. They said, you know, when you get a monopoly government and you don't have two parties, it opens itself up to the possibility of cronyism and corruption and bad government. And I think people out there feel that we ought to have the healthy competition of a two-party system.
I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. When Bob Ehrlich was governor, and you worked for Bob Ehrlich, you were in his cabinet.
Yes.
He was the first Republican governor in Maryland in 30 years, I think, something
right.
like that, since Spiro T. Agnew. And during that time, the Republican Party, registration of Republicans in Maryland did not grow.
Right.
Independents, I think, grew at a faster rate, and Democrats grew at a faster rate than Republicans did during that period when they had a Republican governor. What are your thoughts about that? Why, for instance, independents? Why does someone register independent and not as a Republican in Maryland?
I think it has a lot to do. My group, Change Maryland, which is a nonpartisan group, kind of taps into some of that same frustration that I think is driving that. And I meet people all across the state. What really happened was the Democratic Party shrunk significantly, but the Republican Party didn't grow. That's primarily what happened. The Democrats are down to, I think, 52%. At one point, they might have been 70% of the vote in Maryland. And the largest, fastest-growing group are independent voters. And I think what it basically says is, I'm frustrated, like I said earlier, with politics and politicians, and I don't really think either party is addressing me as a voter. I think that's what people are saying, and perhaps they're saying, "Hey, maybe these Democrats aren't representing me. They're taxing me to death. I don't agree with the direction we're heading. But you know what? I don't like everything these Republicans are talking about either." And I think more people are starting to focus in on voting for the candidate as opposed to just towing the party line. You know, John F. Kennedy once said, "Sometimes party loyalty demands too much." And I think there are folks out there that feel that way. And I know lifelong Democrats that generation after generation who are saying to me, look, I've never voted for a Republican in my life, But I'm concerned about the direction of Maryland, and I'm going to vote for you in November. Just yesterday, I was at the firefighters convention in Ocean City, and a gentleman came up to me and said, I can't vote for you on Tuesday, but you sure have my vote in November.
Hmm. What do you think about that, by the way? I wanted to ask you this. I meant to ask Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown about this, but I already know his answer. He told an interviewer recently that he was open to the idea of an open primary in Maryland. I know that, you know, that would take an act of the legislature, a vote of the party to change that structure. But what do you think of that idea?
I think it's worth considering. Whatever we can do to get more people involved in the process, and, you know, independent voters are kind of out of the loop and don't get to make decisions in the primaries, and it would bring more people out. The Republican Party needs to grow, and if we get more people that are willing to vote in the Republican primary, that certainly would be a good thing, in my opinion.
Hey, for folks who aren't as familiar with Larry Hogan as they may be with some of the other candidates, just a little bit of bio here before we go on with my questions. We keep referring to you as an Anne Arundel County businessman. Tell us about the nature of your business. And also, I mentioned your role in the Ehrlich cabinet. You might as well tell our listeners about that, too.
Sure. Well, I've spent most of my life in the private sector. I'm a small businessman. I started my company about 29 years ago. Started in Prince George's County, and now we're in Anne Arundel. My business is in Annapolis, and I'm in the commercial real estate business. And so I like to call it private sector economic development. I've been focused on, you know, trying to help companies grow and find locations and help them grow their businesses and find places to put their businesses. So we've brought companies and jobs into the state, and that's what we do on a day in and day out basis. I'm no stranger to politics, but I really have never been an elected official, haven't held elective office. But I served in Bob Ehrlich's cabinet, and I was a secretary of appointments, which not a lot of people know what that does. I didn't keep the calendar, some people might think.
You were the green bag man.
It's the green bag, yeah. And we appointed 7,300 people to all three branches of government, so it's a pretty important job. We appointed 100 judges, appointed a dozen members of the legislature from both parties, both the House and the Senate, all the other cabinet members, all the regulators and administrators in state government, and every board, commission, and committee that there is, from the Board of Regents down to liquor boards and school boards in some cases. And so I had to work with the Senate, had to deal with Mike Miller almost every single day for 4 years. The Senate Executive Noms Committee, Executive Nominations Committee, is Mike Miller serves on the committee along with the chairman of every standing committee. So it's the senior varsity Democrats. And I had 1,839 unanimous confirmations out of 1,840. So had the ability to work across party lines and get things done.
I should mention that later in this hour, we'll be meeting your running mate, Boyd Rutherford, who is lives in Howard County, is an attorney who's held a number of different positions in government and on different commissions over the years.
You know,
a pretty busy man from his resume.
He probably, and obviously I'm biased, but I think he's the most qualified man to ever run for lieutenant governor. His resume is terrific, and when I decided to take on this kind of tough challenge, I knew that turning our state around wasn't going to be easy, and that I needed to find the most capable and most talented, most experienced guy I possibly could to be my running mate, and I found that man in Boyd Rutherford. He and I served together in the Ehrlich cabinet. That's how I got to know him well. We were very good friends. Our families are friends. He went on to serve as Assistant Secretary of Agriculture under President Bush. He was a deputy administrator of the GSA at the federal level, so he understands running government. I mean, as the Assistant Secretary of Administration, he ran a department of 100,000 employees, basically. It's larger than state government. But he has, like myself, never been elected. A real private sector experience and a diverse background. He's a small businessman and an attorney, and I'm proud to have him on my ticket.
Boyd Rutherford is here with us at WYPR today, right now enjoying lunch, brought to us by Breathe Bookstore Cafe on Thursday now. And Boyd will be joining us about a half an hour from now, a little less than that. In the meantime, we get to ask questions of Larry Hogan, Republican candidate for governor in Tuesday's primary, 410-662-8780. Larry, you just said turning our state around, so you think the state is going in the wrong direction. 84% of Republicans in a poll that The Sun conducted a few weeks ago agree with you. Turning our state around, Maryland's headed in the wrong direction, so tell us why you think that.
Well, it's not just me that thinks that. I can tell you I meet people every single day that feel that way, and not just Republicans. Our economy's a mess, and there's really no arguing that fact. Over the past 8 years, our state has lost 6,500 small businesses. We only have three Fortune 500 companies left. When Bob Ehrlich was governor, we had 13 headquartered here in Maryland. Unemployment is up 76%. We've lost 80,000 additional jobs. And we've had the largest mass exodus of taxpayers fleeing our state of any state in the Mid-Atlantic region, one of the worst in the nation. 31,000 Marylanders have voted with their feet and headed for the exits, taking with them $1.7 billion a year out of our economy. Federal government, the Obama administration, just last week said that we're 49th out of 50 states in economic growth. Maryland has zero economic growth when all the other states in the country are recovering and we're not. We're 41st in business friendliness. Almost any economic statistic you can find from any independent group rates Maryland's economy as not doing very well. And I'd like to, one of the reasons that really got me in this race, I want to turn that around. I want to get our economy moving again. I want to create more opportunities and more jobs for our citizens. And it's something I think that we're completely focused on jobs, middle-class families, and restoring our economy.
If that picture is as bleak as you describe it there with a number of statistics you just threw at it, what do you do about it?
Well, it's not going to be easy to turn around 8 years of decline, and those statistics are alarming. And quite frankly, it's going to be an enormous challenge, and we're going to have to get Democrats and Republicans working together to get our economy back on track. But a number of things that can be done. First of all, I mentioned we're 41st out of 50 states in business friendliness. Well, 80% of our jobs come from small businesses. We've chased 6,500 of them out of the state. Most of our large companies have left already. As you know, even McCormick, a Maryland institution for 125 years, is looking to move to Delaware or Pennsylvania or Virginia.
But how do you know it's our policies, our taxation structure, our tax structure that drives a company out? I mean, I understand. You can give me a long list of companies that no longer exist,
right.
A long list of companies that no longer exist here, and I could probably find you a number of different reasons why they made those choices. You think it has to do with what, though? Tax climate?
It absolutely has to do with
regulation?
Yeah, it has to do with three things. Three things, basically. One, we have this anti-business attitude. You know, CEO Magazine ranks us as 41st out of 50 states in business friendliness. So part of it is simply they don't feel welcome. They don't feel they're important, and people don't want to stay someplace where they're not welcome.
Because there are too many Democrats here? It's a blue state?
It has nothing to do with Democrats. It's just that the current administration has been hostile to business. So the attitude is wrong. If I were elected governor, Maryland would be open for business. We would change the direction. With every cabinet secretary we appointed would be focused on how do we create more growth, more opportunities for our citizens, how do we create more jobs, how do we help existing Maryland companies grow and expand, and how do we attract more businesses to come to Maryland. We've lost 26% of our manufacturing base and 25,000 manufacturing jobs. I mean, real people are being hurt. These aren't just rich business owners that are being affected. These are people that are unemployed. Unemployment's up 76%. People are losing their jobs left and right.
What do you mean unemployment's up 76%?
From the beginning of the O'Malley administration until today, unemployment is up 76%. It was over 100%. We've started in recent months to see a little bit of improvement, but it's still pretty horrible.
Okay. We had a little thing called a recession there, too.
Well, no, the recession affected the whole country.
Yeah.
But most places in the country actually are growing jobs, and most of them have turned their economies around, but Maryland ranks 49th out of 50 states.
Okay, Larry Hogan is our guest in this hour of midday, candidate for governor in Tuesday's primary, June 24th. Some people are already out there voting already. Actually, the numbers for early voting look pretty good. Some people are surprised at the number.
It's encouraging. I mean, we're seeing a lot of people out there. They're excited, and I'm glad they're participating. Early voting numbers are up, and today's the last day, as you mentioned. So we're hoping people, regardless of their party affiliation, will get out there and vote.
Questions for Larry Hogan when we get back, 410-662-8780. Feel free to phone right in. Also, if you can't get in, if the phone line's busy, try an email, midday@wypr.org. We're on Twitter at @MiddayWYPR, and you can post a question on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page where there's a Baltimore Sun feature about our guest in this hour, Larry Hogan. You can read that as well. Welcome back to Midday. Questions for Larry Hogan in this hour of the show. He's a Republican candidate for governor, one of four. 410-662-8780. Joe in Baltimore, we'll go to you with a question for Larry. Go right ahead.
Hi. I've heard the other candidate's position on the Affordable Care Act, but I wasn't aware of yours. Did you oppose the ACA when it was first proposed?
Well, actually, I didn't have any vote with respect to the ACA. You know, obviously, it's a federal law that's been enacted, and it took place in Congress. So, my personal opinion on the Affordable Care Act didn't really come into play. But what I have been out front on and been a leader on for since October is this failed rollout of the Affordable Care Act here in Maryland, which is a national disgrace. I mean, we've wasted $250 million on a failed website that doesn't work. While people are losing their health care coverage, it was the worst implementation of the Affordable Care Act of any state in the nation. We're the first state to actually scrap the entire system, and it outrages me that we wasted $250 million of taxpayers' money that did nothing to help people who really need help with health care. It was just thrown out the window on a broken website, and now we're spending more money to try to rent a site from another state because we were so inept and incompetent, and basically, because of politics and incompetence, this thing has failed. But it doesn't matter whether you are in favor of the Affordable Care Act or you oppose it. Either way, you've got to be outraged with Maryland's failed implementation of it.
Okay. Would you concede that despite these problems that are, albeit costly, and have cost the state more and the federal government more than they should have, that, you know, do you give them any credit for signing up people who didn't have or had poor insurance before?
Well, a lot of people have lost their health care coverage, so, you know, you have to take into effect, you know, who lost coverage that had it before and who might have picked up coverage that didn't have it. Obviously, it's going to help some folks that were not insured who are potentially now getting insured. But
people who lost insurance, they lost insurance because their insurance did not meet the standards of the ACA, and they were supposed to sign up for new policies, right?
Either way, it's been an unmitigated disaster, and all I hear from are people that are just outraged that they lost their health care coverage. We had people contacting us saying, you know, I'm a cancer patient, and I no longer have service because of the failed implementation in Maryland. I'm no longer able to pay for my health care. So there are serious people out there suffering. I understand the intentions of it were good, but they really have failed in the implementation. It's hurt an awful lot of people.
So you know somebody who had cancer, lost their policy, and still does not have an insurance policy?
I don't know the person, but this is someone who contacted us that gave us the story about the problems that they were going through. And I hear similar kinds of stories almost every day as I'm out there talking with folks.
Okay. The number is about 343,000 people who were signed up for health insurance who either didn't have it or had a substandard policy in the past. And the number, $250 million, you may be correct about that number. I'm not certain what the total number is for the original website and the recovery. We were just talking about this with Anthony Brown. It's several millions of dollars. I don't know if it's $250 million, but
it's hard to pin it down, actually, Dan. So that's the number we believe is correct. But some people think it, when you add in the $60 million that we're going to spend on renting the site from Connecticut, basically, it could be over $300 million, but they really haven't been releasing a lot of information, and it's difficult to find out how much it costs.
I can understand that you, as a candidate, pointing to this as costly incompetence or whatever, especially if you end up facing off against Anthony Brown in the general election. But in terms of on the ground and how it's functioning and what happens next with the ACA in this state of Maryland, is there anything you would change?
I would have changed the entire implementation, and I would change it now. I would stop spending taxpayers' money in the state, and I wouldn't spend the money on the Connecticut site. Here's what our neighbor in Virginia did. Virginia, by the way, has been the largest recipient of former Maryland businesses, jobs, and taxpayers. And they're our next-door neighbor. You know, they're a very similar state as far as they have a lot of federal presence. We're right next to Washington, right across the Potomac River. Virginia said, you know, we have great private sector exchanges in Virginia that work really well. And if you want to take advantage of the Affordable Care Act, you can use the federal site to go on. The federal site, while it didn't start out great at the beginning, it is functioning better than Maryland's. And so they didn't spend the $250 or $300 million that we did, and yet they signed up, I think, three or four times as many people. They just did a better job of implementation, so I wouldn't have wasted the money. I asked them, you know, we called on them to stop spending money. We called on federal takeover, as did many of the Democratic congressmen that represent our state. And then we called on them not to spend the money on the Connecticut site. So almost every step that they've taken, I would have taken a different direction.
The Virginia Assembly just last week or the week before said no to federal expansion of Medicaid for poor people in Virginia so that they would have insurance. Do you agree with that?
it's not an issue that we've really focused on at this point that much. I'd like to get more information on it before making any kind of final decision about what we would do with Medicaid.
Okay. Larry Hogan, let's get some more questions for you from our listeners here. Mike in Dundalk, you're next. Go right ahead, please.
Okay. As a college student, I'm concerned by the current job market we have, coupled with my student loans. And they keep adding taxes like Obamacare. Will you lessen the strain on businesses from taxes like Obamacare so we can actually have more jobs in Maryland?
Well, this is an issue that, first of all, thanks for calling in. And I talk to a lot of folks that are either college students or just graduated from college. And unfortunately, that's where we have our largest unemployment in Maryland is with young people. And it's difficult. I mean, people are struggling with college loans, and you've gone through, in some cases, smart kids have gotten good degrees, and they've got this large student debt, and they can't find employment. And that's kind of what I was talking about earlier. We've chased many of the most productive job creators out of our state. We're no longer competitive with any of the states in our region, so businesses are making economic decisions to go elsewhere. It's why unemployment is up 76%. It's why we've lost 80,000 jobs. So there's three things I would do. One, we change the business attitude. Two, we're going to try to effectively cut spending and be able to roll back some of these tax increases that have happened that have hurt the business climate. And three, we're going to have to streamline and improve the regulatory environment. There are things in Maryland that it's unpredictable. It's constantly changing. People can't get the straight answer. And they can go to other states and get things done in 90 days. It takes 2 or 3 years to get done in Maryland. So all of those things have to happen. You can't be pro-jobs if you're anti-business. That's where 80% of the jobs come from. And we've got to focus on how can we grow our economy and put people like you to work.
Another caller, Emily in Rockville. You're on Midday. Your question for Larry Hogan, please.
Hi, thank you. So I've been listening to your message on taxes and business, and I've been pretty excited about it because I think that's actually really what we need. But I did hear that when you ran against Denny Hoyer, you supported abortion. And I'm just wondering if you would continue to support abortion as governor.
Well, first of all, that's really not true. I've always personally been opposed to abortion. This is not really an issue here in Maryland because it's not something we're focused on. I'm focused on the economy and not issues that divide us, but issues that unite us. It's not something that we're going to be able to change or do anything about. And I have my personal opinions about the issue, but I have never changed my position on anything. I've always felt the same way. I have a personal opinion about it, but I'm not going to change the laws of Maryland.
Opinion? Should it be a public opinion?
No, I just said.
By the law?
I'm personally opposed to abortion, always have been. But I also understand I'm taking an oath as governor to uphold the laws of Maryland. The Supreme Court's decided. The voters of Maryland actually decided.
I got you, Larry. Here's Fred in Frederick with a question for Larry Hogan. Go right ahead, Fred.
Yes, Mr. Hogan, like many Marylanders, I have concerns about the environment and Frederick County, Maryland, is going through a boom in terms of development and commercially as well as residentially. I was most impressed, sir, with your ability as a businessman to preserve 75 acres of woodland conservation area over in the Brandywine section of Prince George's County in Maryland. I wonder if you could expand upon that, how you were able to pull this rabbit out of the hat through this deus ex machina type of business arrangement for the sake of conservation, how you can encourage other developers within the state to do likewise.
Well, thanks. You have a lot of information there. That was a pretty good question.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
I it's been a long time, and I hadn't really didn't know he knew about it. Not even sure when it happened, but
'70s or '80s.
I think it was in the '80s. Huh. My company has done some. We've been involved in land brokerage and. We've done quite a bit of preservation. We've done wetlands mitigation, forest conservation. We've put a lot of properties into preservation. I actually did a 2,800-acre coastal barrier island off the coast of South Carolina where we protected it with the Nature Conservancy for the protection of sea turtles. Who are on the island and kept it from development. So, I think we need business and growth here in Maryland, and I'm in favor of positive planned development and growth. But we also, at the same time, have to protect our environment, and it's something that I'm concerned about. It's not a black or white thing. It's not like you can be pro development or pro environment. You actually can be both.
This question came up in the previous hour when Lieutenant Governor Brown was here on fracking for natural gas in Maryland. Of course, that's a question that's remaining out there. We don't know whether it's going to be allowed to go forward or not. So I'd like your view on that. And also the question about Cove Point that's come up because of the proposal to ship more natural gas there across the state to the Cove Point terminal and then ship it around the world from there.
So yeah.
What are your views on those two ideas?
Well, on energy policy, I'm sort of an all-of-the-above guy, and I think we ought to try a lot of the different things to get us away from our reliance on oil. And natural gas is a clean energy, much cleaner than coal. We are sitting on, with the Marcellus Shale, we're sitting on a real treasure trove of natural resources here in Maryland that's, you know, economically has the potential to be a tremendous boost to our economy. And, you know, obviously we wanted, whatever's done needs to be done in an environmentally sensitive way. And I think we've been studying this issue to death, and we've had a commission looking into this that keeps postponing the decision.
We're supposed to get a report this summer.
We're supposed to eventually get a report, but it's way overdue. And I've been to Western Maryland, and I'll tell you what, we talked about the economic blight here in the state. There's no place where they're getting more affected than Western Maryland, and those folks are seeing in neighboring states of Pennsylvania and West Virginia economic boom as a result of the extraction of natural gas, which we've been doing for decades, by the way, pretty successfully. And I just so I want to do it in an environmentally sensitive way, but I think it's critical to our state economy for Western Maryland. Cove Point, same thing. We want to make sure it's done. I know there were some environmental concerns, mostly from out-of-state folks. The people that are most affected in Calvert County are thrilled with the idea, overwhelmingly. And I think it could really help boost Maryland's economy if we can find a way to extract and export clean energy like natural gas.
So it's a big if. It's the big if, isn't it? You're all for it if it can be done safely.
Exactly.
And that's what we're waiting to hear.
Right.
410-662-8780 is our phone number here. Dan Roderick's on Midday, spending this hour with Larry Hogan, who's a Republican candidate for governor of Maryland. And perhaps you already voted for Larry Hogan. This early voting has started in the state. June 24th is the primary. That's on Tuesday. Thomas in Baltimore, you're up next with your question for our guest. Go right ahead.
Hi there. I've heard you say before that you won't bring up marriage as an issue if you're governor, and that's understandable. But before I go out and vote for you, I was curious, how did you vote on the gay marriage referendum in 2012?
Well, you know, I actually, my position previously was I supported, you know, I'm not for discrimination against anybody. I'm for equal rights. And but gay marriage, I was not a proponent of. So but I understand that the majority of the voters in Maryland are. I understand it's the law, and I want to treat everybody in the state fairly, and I want to uphold the laws that have been enacted. This is something that has been decided and voted on by the people of Maryland, and you know, I'm not going to do anything to change it.
Here's a question from Brad, I guess, wants to get you on the record about climate change. Is global warming really happening, and are man-made emissions a large causative factor?
Well, there's no question. I would say climate change rather than global warming, because it's warming and then it's cooling. So we've now changed the definition from global warming to climate change. And there's no question that the climate is changing. And I do think that you know, man does have something to do with the problem. It's a question of how much and what we can do about it. And so that's where I think the disagreement comes down and what we have to figure out. Anthony Brown, who was just in here a little while ago, he said a couple of weeks ago his top priority as governor would be to stop global warming. And, you know, I understand that he has the right to have that opinion, but I don't know that the governor of Maryland and our little state is actually going to be able to stop the changing of the climate of the earth. We can do some things that I think are environmentally friendly, and that and we would, you know, we would certainly do that. But my priorities are jobs, middle class families, and restoring our economy.
Let me ask you this about another climate, the political climate in Maryland. So last time we had a Republican governor, he had a tough time with the legislature, the Democratic-controlled legislature. It didn't get a whole lot done, really. I remember a couple of specific proposals that sounded like pretty good ideas, pretty progressive ideas that came from Bob Ehrlich that they went nowhere in the General Assembly, I guess partly because Democrats didn't want a Republican to get credit for these progressive ideas. But so what happens if, say, you win the nomination Tuesday, you go on, say you even become the governor, we have another Republican governor and yet a Democratic dominant legislature.
Right.
What do you do about that?
Well, first of all, as I mentioned, my whole life has been about bipartisanship, and I've now created the largest nonpartisan citizen group in state history. This really is not your typical fight between Democrats and Republicans. This is about Maryland's future, and I think if I'm elected, it's going to send a message to the leadership of the House and Senate, the Democratic leaders, that maybe some of the policies they've been enacting over the past 8 years are not that popular with our citizens, and maybe they'll start to be willing to sit down and consider going in a different direction or finding common ground. There are some things that a governor can do by himself, and a new governor with a different attitude, with a new cabinet, with a different focus. There are things that we can do administratively. We can run the executive branch of government more efficiently and more cost-effectively. On the regulatory policy, we can make some vast improvements and streamline getting things done. But in order to roll back these taxes, we're going to have to convince the legislature. And we're going to use the bully pulpit to try to get people to help convince them. But I've always found that, you know, you can disagree without being disagreeable. And I've known Mike Miller and Mike Bush for many years. And while we don't agree on everything, I think we could sit down at the table and hammer out some things for the good of the people of Maryland. That's what I'm hopeful. I know it's not going to be easy, but we're going to do everything we can to reach across the aisle and come up with real common sense solutions to our problems.
Larry Hogan, let me ask you specifically about the personal income tax. I've heard a couple of your opponents, maybe all three of them in the Republican primary, say that they want to see a phase out of the personal income tax in Maryland. You know, that generates billions of dollars in revenue to operate the state of Maryland, so that's that would be quite a leap if we did something like that. Where are you on that?
Well, it's funny. You know, most of these guys are politicians, and they've been in politics for a while. And we're hearing on the Democratic side, we've heard billions of dollars in new proposed spending without any proposal on how to pay for it, and saying we don't really envision any more tax increases. And on the Republican side, we've had billions of dollars of we're just going to eliminate all the taxes, but we're not going to tell you how we're going to pay for it. You know, we have a requirement here in Maryland for a balanced budget. And so you can't cut taxes without cutting spending. And you can't just say somehow magically you're going to become the governor and the legislature is going to dramatically change overnight so that the folks that just increased all these taxes are now going to eliminate them all. And eliminating the personal income tax, while it sounds like a great idea to some people in Maryland, I would imagine, some frustrated taxpayers, it's not real. I mean, it would blow an $8.5 billion hole in the budget, which they haven't talked about how to pay for. What I've said is, we have to focus on reining in spending and running the government more efficiently, more effectively. We've identified $1.75 billion in waste, fraud, and duplication. It's already been found in independent audits of state agencies that they haven't acted on. If we're somehow able to get some of that rolled back, we can provide real tax relief to the people that need it the most. You know, many of our tax, I mean, the income tax is one that's hurting a lot of people, but there are a lot of them. Many of these 40 tax increases are regressive taxes that hurt people at the lower ends of the income scale the most. And I want to try to roll back as many of the increases as we can, because it's my opinion, it's squeezed middle-class families, it's hurt small businesses, and people are struggling as a result of our failures to rein in spending, and we just keep taxing and taxing people to the point where they want to leave the state. You know, the Gallup poll came out a month ago and said nearly half of all Marylanders, 47%, would leave the state if they could.
Harris poll, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
410-662-8780. Larry Hogan, our guest, Republican candidate for governor. A short break on Midday. We'll come back. We'll also be meeting Boyd Rutherford, Larry Hogan's running mate as lieutenant governor. 410-662-8780. If you have a question for the candidates during this, what remains of this hour of the show, we'll be right back. We'll get back to the phone lines in just a minute with your questions for Larry Hogan. You can also address a question to his running mate, who's joining us now in Studio A, and that's Boyd Rutherford, who came in from Howard County today, campaigning with Larry Hogan. Boyd, nice to meet you.
Good meeting you.
Larry, come in a little closer to the mic there. Larry told us why he selected you, and we're just getting to know you a little bit here. So let me do a little bio with you for our listeners. You're an attorney, an attorney for a while.
For a while, yeah. Let's see. 24 years.
24 years, yeah. And worked in the District of Columbia.
I worked in D.C. I worked in California. I'm licensed in California, Maryland, and the District.
And you went into state and then later the U.S. government and state government. Tell us about your experience in state government.
Okay. Well, actually, I went to the feds first. Then Governor Ehrlich asked me to come to the state, and I came to the state, and then I went back to the feds. But I was the secretary to Maryland Department of General Services, which is the landlord for the state, construction advisor to the Board of Public Works, major procurement entity for the state. And I always tell people the best job I ever had.
Really?
Why did you feel that?
And that was in 2003,
2006? 2003 to 2006.
Right, that's what I have here. So
right.
Why did you like that so much?
You build things. You actually build things when you're there. And you get involved in the internal functions of government. And it is the customer service agency for the other agencies, as I used to say, even when I was at GSA on the federal side, you support the mission of the other agencies. Hmm. That they should be focusing on their core mission, and you provide that backup to them in those kinds of positions.
Governor Ehrlich appointed you to that spot. And then I look at the rest of the resume here, and it's long. Governor's Council on the Chesapeake Bay, the Commission on Correctional Standards, Asbestos Oversight Committee.
Well, we had to remediate a lot of asbestos in the old buildings.
Yeah. Maryland, but some other areas here. Maryland Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, Procurement Advisory Council, all during that period when you were with the state government.
Right.
Now, what had you done before that in the federal government, and what did you do after that?
I was at GSA. I was an appointee at the General Services Administration. I ran the small business office there, and then eventually Administrator Perry, who is now the chairman of the NFL Hall of Fame, or the Professional Football Hall of Fame, Steve Perry, he asked me to take over an office called Performance Improvement, Office of Performance Improvement, looking at the internal aspects of GSA, particularly as it related to a couple of the areas, the procurement areas, that seemed to be competing with one another.
Hmm.
Because GSA, aside from its building side, is funded by fees that are paid by contractors.
Okay, so that was before you went to the state government?
Right. And then the governor called me. The governor, or I should say his chief of staff, what would become his chief of staff, called me, who's a longtime friend, Steve Krzyzewski, asked me to come down and talk to the governor. I always say, never turn down a job until the job is offered, because I had no idea why they were calling me. I thought they'd just talk to me about a few things and maybe offer me some kind of, you know, piddly little job that I wasn't really interested in. So I'm talking to the governor, and I had known Bob a little while longer or previously, and at some point, I guess I didn't get it, and Steve said to me, they asked me, when would I be available? And I said, well, I got a couple of things I'm working on, probably not until the summer. I want to complete some things. And the governor said, well, you know, we want to get our team together, you know, long before then. And Steve said, you know, I don't think you understand what we're saying. We want you to be the secretary of Maryland Department of General Services. And I said, oh, okay. I got to think about that.
So you took that, and you were there 2003 to 2006, and then you said you went back to the federal government?
Yes. I got a call from a friend who was at agriculture at the time, who said, you know, your background is exactly what we are looking for assistant secretary for administration at the Department of Agriculture. And it's a Senate-confirmed position, and we're passing your name on if you don't mind. And I said, well, I don't mind. Go ahead and pass it on. And they sent it to presidential personnel, and I got a call, and rest is history.
So you worked in the Bush administration.
Yes.
So, Boyd Rutherford, so in addition to these jobs in state and federal government, you also were at different law firms at different periods during that time.
Yes. And I've had multiple jobs throughout my life, and I had moved to California, go west, young man. I grew up in D.C., just mm-hmm. to mention that, Washington, D.C. And at one point when I was watching the used to have the Ironman competition. Do they still have that out of Hawaii? And I was watching that, you know, on a March day when it was sleeting, outside, and I'm sitting in my house, and I said, you know, I don't have to live here. I can, and I don't need shots to move. And I got a transfer, and I went to California.
<Don't need shots. laughs> Okay.
And so I moved there, and I went to law school, and I worked for a corporation, and then came back here and worked for a couple of law firms, both in D.C. and Baltimore.
So Larry Hogan.
Yes.
He said, do you want to run for governor with me? You'll be my running mate. You'll be lieutenant governor. I'll be governor if we're elected. And what did you... You said obviously said yes, but what did you think of that
Not
idea?
At first.
Oh, he didn't?
I had to twist his arm.
Yeah,
oh,
twist really? My arm. Yeah.
So what did you think of that idea? Because you've been in government but not in politics. Really.
Right. I've never run for office. You know, we all sit there and say, and I'm quite sure you do too, if I were in charge, I'd do X, but I never really thought I would be in charge or you know, I always thought I'd be a cog in the wheel or something of that nature. I had to really think about it. I had to think about it long. I talked to the family. My wife was a little lukewarm about it. She still is. The kids were extremely supportive, and the fact that they're past that K through 12 made it a lot easier for me from a standpoint that they're, you know, they wouldn't go through any kind of grief in school or undue attention. So eventually I said yes.
And you know, Boyd and I, when we sat down, we talked a lot about the role and how we would work together, and that was part of the discussion. And I really see it as – I'd be more like the CEO and Boyd would be the COO. Sometimes lieutenant governors don't have any real responsibilities. And I see it as we're working together every day actually managing the state government. And Boyd has more administrative government experience than I do. I've got more private sector experience. So I think we're a good team.
I had just one more question for Boyd, and then we'll go back to the phone lines and fill out the time with our listeners calling in. What makes you a Republican? What made you a Republican?
You know, that's a good question. When I first registered, you know, many moons ago, I registered as an independent. In D.C., that meant you didn't vote. I mean, because until the general election, it was all decided because the Democrats are going to win. I had been a Democrat for a long period of time, and I started to realize that many of the issues that were being espoused were not exactly where I thought. And I started talking to more people who were Republicans and found that I did agree on a lot more issues than I disagreed. Now, you know, like with anything, you don't agree with everything.
But what particular issues? What would you say turned you away from the Democratic Party?
Quite frankly, and I say this often, I think the Democratic Party treats African Americans as victims. And we're not all victims. And I refuse to be a victim. I was a victim when my apartment was broken into, when my old 8-track radio was stolen out of my car.
8-track, good old boy.
Yeah, shows how old I am. But I don't think that the government and party should treat me as a victim.
Okay, that was a turning point for you.
That was a turning point. Not the 8-track. I was still a Democrat when that was stolen.
Boyd Rutherford is a running mate with Larry Hogan, our other guest in this hour of midday. Let's go back to the phone lines, take a couple of questions here. Tom in Mount Vernon, go right ahead with your question, please.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to applaud the fact that these two gentlemen who are not really politicians are running for office. I think that gives Maryland a choice. Secondly, I'd like to ask both gentlemen what they are going to do about the mess that is our Maryland prison system. My son is currently incarcerated in Jessup, and the ability to contact him, the ability to speak to someone at the institution about his progress is demeaning, bordering on inhumane. And I'd like to have a response from both gentlemen about what they're going to do about the embarrassment and the mess that is our prison system here in the state.
Tom, thank you.
Well, thank you, Tom, and thanks for the encouraging words about us not being politicians and running. We appreciate that. There's been a lot of mismanagement in this administration, unfortunately, and we talked about the healthcare rollout, but probably the other one that really stands out is the mismanagement of our state prison system, which has, again, been an unmitigated disaster, and it's been front page of the news for a long, long time, and quite frankly, nobody's accepted responsibilities for the failures there, but we basically had inmates running the state prison system, and it was almost complete collapse of
the
Baltimore City Jail.
It was a particular facility. Would you say the whole system, or would you say a particular facility?
Well, the Baltimore City Jail was the worst example and the one that got the most attention, but I think the entire system needs to be improved, and I guess it goes to, and maybe Boyd weigh in on this, because It's an issue I know he cares about. But I think it gets to the whole root of people that don't know how to run things are trying to run things. And that's why we think people ought to consider voting for us, regardless of if they're Democrats or Republicans, because we believe that we can do a better job of managing the state government and providing better services.
Yeah, they've had a lot of problems out at Jessup as well. And I think a couple of months ago, maybe a year ago, there were two breakouts, essentially, where they took individuals to the hospitals, and one led them on a police chase and a shootout and some other things when he grabbed a gun. Larry's absolutely right. I think the key is putting people in positions, be it cabinet people that are going to look at the details of how they're operating and functioning. Some of these agencies, and I don't want to get on my high horse of defending my old agency, DGS, but some of these agencies are doing more than what they should be in terms of, if you're a Department of Corrections, then your focus should be on corrections. You should not be in the business of building new facilities. That can be done by somebody else. So why do you have personnel there that are doing the same job that other places are doing that job?
Another question, this one from Aberdeen, Harford County. Alex, you're on Midday now. Go right ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. Mr. Hogan, I received your mailer yesterday. One thing that caught my eye is regarding Common Core. You said reform Common Core. Where do you stand on this issue? I would like to see it repealed. Where do you stand on this issue with Common Core?
Yeah, well, we're not opposed to standards, but we are saying that this Common Core thing has been another case of real mismanagement. And what we're seeing is it's kind of a disaster about ready to happen. Parents, teachers, and students are really up in arms about this for lots of different reasons. I mean, even the teachers' union called it a train wreck about ready to happen, and nobody seems to be ready to do this. So repealing it is something, and basically we're guys who tell it like it is. It's kind of like saying you're going to eliminate all the taxes. Whether or not we're going to repeal it or not, I'm not sure we have the capability of doing that, and the governor doesn't have a magic wand he can wave, but we have said we'd like to push the pause button. We'd like to get this thing under control and make sure, I mean, education is so important. We can't be tinkering around and experimenting with it without making sure we're getting things right. We want our kids to get the best education they can, and we don't want to, you know, ruin the entire educational system because you want to be first to get something done and you're not ready for it.
Well, yeah, and
some governors have pushed the stop button on one and maybe another one.
Yeah, we would push the stop button on it and stop it from happening, but whether way we can repeal the entire law is this.
Right, because the state accepted money for this project, and I forgot how many hundreds of millions of dollars we actually got. We already have a $400 million deficit that we're looking at. I don't think we have the money to even pay it back if we were able to repeal it. So, like Larry said, let's talk realistic here.
Any last comment you'd like to say to our listeners? Anything?
Well, we thank you for the time. And Boyd and I are running around the state. We're on a 14-day bus tour to 24 jurisdictions and 100 different stops, and we're encouraging people to get out and vote. We've got today's the last day of early voting. We want people to get out and exercise their vote.
And Tuesday is Election Day, June 24th. We've been speaking with Larry Hogan, Republican candidate for governor, and Boyd Rutherford, his running mate, a candidate for lieutenant governor in the primary on Tuesday. Thank you both for being here. Boyd, nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And thanks to Breathe Bookstore Cafe for providing lunch for our guests again today. We'll see you again tomorrow for more of our candidates' conversations.
Midday senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer and director is Jonathan Ahrens. The associate producer, Michael Himowitz. Our interns are Brian Gilbert, Tyler Downey, and Anna Muckerman. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming available at WYPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.